Hello there, and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week, your three, we'll call them American heroes, myself, the illustrious Benny Hamlin, and the always great JTE, break down your box office, your movie news, our favorites, and of course, the new release. And the new release this week was Disney's Haunted Mansion. No, not a sequel to the Eddie Murphy classic. But yes, another movie based on the ride, the Disneyland Park ride, The Haunted Mansion. Not doing so well, and that will initially kick us off into the box office. But before we talk about the tale of the box office, I do have to say hi to my good pals here on the show, because I was out of town. Thank you guys for recording an amazing episode. Your Barbenheimer episode was top freaking notch. Good job, gentlemen. And hello, good to see you again.
Thanks, Moose. You know, was it hard leaving the United States when the biggest movie event of the last maybe 5 years was happening? Or were you just like in vacation land? So you're like, I could care less. Did you miss that cinema event?
Kind of, because there's so much hype, and it's so hard to like ignore the hype behind everything that you read, and people are going gaga. I'm seeing people like, I'm going for my third or fourth time doing the Barbenheimer experience. So a little bit, but then at the same time, I was on a cruise of the Greek islands, and you know, I'm not going to complain too much about that, but being a movie buff as I am. Yeah, I of course. And I do have my homework cut out for me this week in figuring out when to put in the Barbenheimer experience, but it's going to happen along with our next week's movie, which will be TMNT.
Yeah, I just want to say, going to the theater that weekend was reminding me of when Dark Knight came out or Avengers Infinity War Endgame. The energy and seeing how packed it was, lines out the door. I go to movies every weekend, and I'm in LA, and this is a very big movie town, and even I felt the difference by the amount of people that were coming out dressed up as Barbie or Oppenheimer, or some people were dressed as a cross between Barbie and Oppenheimer. So it was a really fun feeling. Remind me a little bit, you know, growing up, going to the movies. I remember seeing Independence Day when it came out, and it felt like an event. It felt like everyone and their mother and grandmother were at the theater that weekend. That's what it kind of felt like when you went to the movies last weekend. It was like, wow, this is kind of a cool throwback to when movies were just eventicized. Like, of course, Endgame Infinity War is also like that, but the fact it's two movies, very different movies, I don't know, you've got a great range of different kind of audiences, and I just loved it. It felt awesome.
Now, Benny, it sounds like you had a different experience going to Barbenheimer last weekend, having listened to last week's show.
No, the energy in the building was great. Like, in the area I live in, it is not a movie area. It is a ghost town. Like, when I go to the theaters, regardless of how big the movie is, if I go on opening night, it's me and like seven other people in the theater. And the theaters that day were packed around here. So you can tell that it got in the cultural ethos. I mean, it's sad that we were treated to a very unfunny Barbie movie, but hey, life is life. We'll take what we can get. It was still great to see the energy there at the theater.
Nice. Well, gents, let's get to the tale of the box office. Once again, Barbie kicking ass. $93 million in its second week. It's already $351 million domestic. It's $755 million worldwide in its second week. That's nuts. Oppenheimer coming in second, $46 million, $174 domestic. Haunted Mansion, this week's theme, the spooky Haunted Mansion with, wow, Owen Wilson starring, bringing in Disney $24 million on its debut weekend. The Sound of Freedom, it's still clapping along, 4 weeks in, $140 million domestically, $12 million this past weekend. It certainly knows its audience, and they're showing up in droves. Sad to say that actually surpassed Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which came in fifth place with $10 million, doing $140 million domestic, but $350 million worldwide. So it's making its money. We're going to continue to see Ethan Hunt, but sad that A Sound of Freedom has beat a far superior movie that is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
Well, you know, we've not seen it. We don't know. Maybe it blows it out of the water.
I've seen the trailer. And if you compare the two trailers, I think more love and care went into Mission Impossible every frame.
I watched one of those like 7 minute, like where they show, you know, clips every from like every like 10 minutes in the movie. And I was like, okay, I saw what I needed to see. One of us, you know what? One of us is going to have to lose a dare and go and see it. We're going to have to take one for the team and report back.
I'll watch it when it streams for free somewhere. Yeah. I just don't want to spend time or money.
Well, if I say more than 20 times in this episode, I'll take the bullet and go watch.
Okay. I will count that.
Rounding out your top 10, you have Talk to Me, the Aussie film, the surprise horror film that came to the U.S. that was bought by A24 and came to the U.S. making $10 million. JTE, our very own JTE, saw it this past weekend, and we'll give us a little bit of a review in our third segment. And then wrapping out the top 7, 8 through 9 and 10 is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny at number 7, $4 million. Elemental, still going strong, $3 million, $140 million domestic, $300 million worldwide. It's at the point where it's at a break even. I think none of us, weeks ago when we started this podcast, thought that that movie was going to have the kind of legs that it's had. Insidious, The Red Door continues to pull in some money, $3 million, $78 million domestic. And Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse wrapping out your top 10 with $1 million, $379 million domestic. Threw out lots of numbers, lots was said. Benny, what does the tale of the box office tell you this week?
That people really wanted to go and watch the Barbie movie. That's pretty much what it was saying. I knew that Barbie would crush the box office like this week, and it held amazing, especially for a movie that made $150 million. Like the hold it had is super impressive. I do want to see if it holds like this in week three, because I think now that the cultural zeitgeist excitement is wearing off, I want to see like how much repeat business it does. And so I'm excited to see what its week three is going to look like. And Oppenheimer like is continuing to play like a summer like blockbuster movie when it's a 3-hour prestige movie, which is super impressive. And The Haunted Mansion did what I thought it would do. I was the only person in the theater to watch it. And I think that's pretty much most people's experience, the 12 of us that went out and saw it. You know, and I think the only people that did go and see it were people with podcasts to talk about it.
You're not wrong. Well, JT, how about you? What does the tale of the box office tell you?
Yeah, definitely thinking about Disney's Haunted Mansion. The theater I saw it in was a Dolby theater. It was about 75% full. You know, I'm in LA, a lot of movie people out here, a lot of people. AMC Burbank 16, which actually was on social media quite a bit during the Barbieheimer weekend, because I think it's the number one theater like in America for business, and it's my go-to theater. So it's very rare I go to that theater and it's not close to a packed audience. But as I was watching Haunted Mansion, I didn't react a lot during out the film, and I feel like there wasn't a lot of laughs or reaction in my audience. I'll get more into that in the review, but this definitely geared more towards kids, and I'm curious why they decided to release it in the summer and not hold this thing on until October, because I feel like it just would have played much better around Halloween. And I don't quite understand the placement of July. I know it's a big budget Disney film, but as soon as I heard about the strike, I would have pushed this thing to October, because who knows how much Disney's going to have coming out. A lot of movies are getting pushed back already. And this just feels like a perfect family film for the Halloween season. So I think this was a little bit of a case of bad placement by Disney. I mean, because there's a huge cast of stars in this movie. So I think it's not hard to advertise. And you're also basing on a very popular ride in Disneyland. So I think Disney's going to lick their wounds a little bit. Maybe they'll throw on Disney Plus right when Halloween comes, and they'll see as that as a little victory. Maybe they'll do really good on Disney Plus streaming, but definitely kind of a bummer. But also, I don't know if the movie rewards a big box office draw. So we'll get into that later.
I'm with you, JT. I'm a little shocked as to why the Haunted Mansion. Like, I think Disney's got smart people working for them. What about this movie after it was done and wrapped and in the can? Did they go, this could contend with Barbenheimer? Like, two of the most hyped movies this year were Barbie and Oppenheimer. I don't understand the rationale between the Disney executives when they were like, week two or with Barbie, this will beat Barbie. This will make its money back. And this movie is going to lose Disney a ton of money. And to your point, JT, this was the perfect movie to be able to put in an October slot. It would have made its money in October and had some legs in November. It probably would have even stuck around through like the November holiday of Thanksgiving, right? Families are going out to the movies. So that's almost the ideal placement for a movie like this. And it just doesn't make any sense to me that they put this in, you know, towards the end of July in blockbuster season, thinking that it was going to contend with what was Barbie and Oppenheimer. But again, a shocking move by Disney, which doesn't, at this point, probably doesn't surprise a lot of us. But I mean, the big story obviously is Barbie. Having not seen it yet, but excited to see it this week. I fully anticipated Barbie opening at well over $100 million. And I figured it was going to, having seen how much positive review was coming out of this, I figured this was going to be another first place week for it. I just didn't know it was going to do $93 million in its second week after having done $150 million the first week. So it just proves that this is a solid quality movie with rewatchable tendencies. So I'm excited to go and watch it. I don't know if I'm going to try to do the Barbenheimer experience. I don't know if I have the like patience or wherewithal to sit in the movie theaters for 5 hours. Yeah. So I might do one day and one the next day. But Oppenheimer, again, listening to your guys' review, it sounds like just a powerhouse and a masterclass of acting skills on display and filmmaking on display. And so I'm very anxious to see both of these. I am a little sad that Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning is not doing better. Again, I'm wondering if this is just like a franchise fatigue or if it was just a matter of like better movies were coming out.
I'll say this for Disney and Tom Cruise. I don't think anybody knew how big this Barbenheimer thing was going to be. Hmm. I think Tom Cruise, like, I'm Mission Impossible. I'm coming off Top Gun. I don't think he had any idea. I think most of Hollywood didn't know how big this was going to be. Even as somebody who was like, oh, this is going to be a big weekend for Barbie, just like you said, and Oppenheimer, I didn't expect this. Yeah. The amount of money it's making worldwide and in America is beyond what I imagined. And I think Tom Cruise probably thought, hey, it's Mission Impossible. We'll open a week before. Now I look back, they're probably like, damn, we should have held this till the end of August when everything else is pretty much out. We could have just dominated September because I just think these studios did not understand how big this was going to be because I don't think most people understood. Knew it was going to be big. Didn't know it was going to be this big. I did not have Barbie as a billion-dollar movie coming into the summer, and it is going to be. It did better than Super Mario.
It's going to be a billion-dollar movies by week four easily. Yeah. Easily. This movie is kicking ass on all cylinders. But last, and I just want to give a little kudos to Elemental with the legs that it's had, and I mentioned it earlier. It will still lose money, but I don't think it's going to lose as much money as most of us anticipated. I mean, we all pretty much were like, this is a terrible decision on Disney's end to release this during blockbuster season. But it's almost counter-programming. There's so much out there for adults over the last couple of weeks that the kiddies still needed a movie to see, and that's why Elemental is doing as well as it's doing, and why Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is still in the top 10. That's going to be streaming in a week or two. It's still in the top 10, making millions. So kudos to both of those movies.
And I think in general this year, we've seen that, you know, trends change over time. And I think we're just in a trend right now where people are wanting something new. They're not wanting to go back in for the next installment of the franchise.
Yeah.
Because every movie that's came out that has been a part of a very large franchise so far this year has underperformed. Fast X, Indiana Jones, Mission Impossible, and so on. You know, the wheel has turned, and we are now in the thing where people want standalone IP all of a sudden. And I think that's just what the studios are going to have to give them for a while.
I hope so. I mean, that's how we got Ghostbusters. That's how we got Back to the Future. Mm. Like some of our favorite 80s and 90s films, Speed. Those were not franchises. Those were original movies that people made. So I agree. I would love to see more original films that people get excited about. But I mean, Barbie is an IP. She is, you know, something that's been around forever. And Into the Spider-Verse was a sequel off a film that won Academy Award for Best Animated Film, and that really performed well. I think more so than I expected.
But it wasn't part five, part
agreed,
part seven.
Yeah. Well, speaking of 80s icons, we have once again the sad news to report, and that is the passing of Paul Reubens today as we record this. At the age of 70, Pee-wee Herman himself lost, unfortunately, the battle to cancer that he's been fighting over the last 7 or 8 years. And for many of us of a certain age, and that's us three fine gentlemen, we knew Pee-wee Herman. We watched Pee-wee's movies. We watched his TV show. We watched his cartoons. He had a cereal. Like, he was the face of endorsements for us for a very, very long time. So, guys, your thoughts over the passing of Paul Reubens? What was your favorite role he played? JT, I'm going to toss it over to you, man.
Yeah, listen, Pee-wee's Playhouse was a staple of my childhood. I watched that show religiously, just like I watched Ernest. I used to watch Ernest religiously. I watched Pee-wee. I love that comedy of just extreme goofiness and outlandishness and, like, imaginative. So, yeah, Pee-wee was a huge deal for me growing up. And then Pee-wee's Big Adventure was a great film in the beginning of Tim Burton's career. Talk about a great director matching a great property. And both him and Pee were able to bring, I think, the best in each other. And it's just so sad. And it's funny because, you know, he did have these small roles throughout the 90s and early 2000s. I loved him in Back to the Beach, which is an 80s film. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people probably know, but he has a scene that he basically almost steals the movie. I loved him.
Bird is the word.
I think most people think of Family Guy when they hear that now, but I think of Back to the Beach and Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah. Yep.
I loved his movies, you know, Big Top Pee-wee, you know, he had a lot of fun films, but the first one to me was like the best one, The Big Adventure. I also loved him in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I love how he showed up in that. He was really funny. The movie Blow with Johnny Depp, it was nice to see him do like an R-rated kind of a more serious, but at the same time, he brought a lot of like humor to that role. And 30 Rock, he had one episode, I think in like season one or two of 30 Rock, where he played this prince who was inbred, and it's freaking hilarious. It's one of the funniest episodes because of him. And yeah, it's just so sad to see, you know. And even when, anytime you grow up somebody who, you know, in some ways probably shaped your sense of humor and, you know, made you feel okay to do really goofy and kind of wild, imaginative humor, because that's what he did with that character. He'll be missed. You know, it was really sad. I didn't, you know, like, he kept his battle with cancer a secret to everybody, so nobody really saw this coming. You know, sometimes, you know, I remember when Swayze was diagnosed, he talked about it a lot, and you kind of knew it was coming. He was going through, you know, all his health problems. So, you know, when they do it privately like this, it just comes as a shock, but that's their right. They can do whatever they want. But he'll be missed. R.A.P. Paul Reubens. You were you made this kid laugh a lot.
Benny, how about you? What's your thoughts and feelings towards the passing of Paul Reubens?
So I read the Hollywood Reporter like article on him today, and there were a lot of things in there that I didn't know. So I encourage you, you know, if you're younger and you don't really know much about Paul Reubens, to check that article out. There were some very uncomfortable aspects of his life I didn't know about. Like, I knew about his arrest that kind of derailed his career in the early 90s. And I remember all the jokes, you know, in middle school and high school after he had gotten arrested. And so I think what's sad is, like, you know, he's someone that brought like kids a lot of happiness, and he was a really good performer. Like, even after that, when he would have these bit roles in like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or, you know, things like that, He was a solid actor, and he never really got his big comeback after that. And it's something that I think if it happened in modern times, like, you know, the news cycle would have blown through and he would have been back, you know, after a year or two, you know, in hiatus. Mm. And, you know, he never got that. And so I think like his career was just cut really short from like one really dumb decision that, you know, and that particular thing didn't really hurt anybody. I mean, you know, he's in an adult theater, what else are you doing there? Is, you know, but so, and it's even then, it's what's sad is like, this is, you know, his life's passing. And I'm talking about this one event that derailed his career and not his career that he probably should have had based on the caliber of performer he was. But anyway, definitely check out Back to the Beach, classic 80s weird comedy. And Buffy the Vampire Slayer is actually my favorite performance of his because it's the first time I saw him outside of the Pee-wee makeup. And he did a really good job in that, even though it's kind of a silly movie.
Still to this day, if I hear the song Tequila, I think of the dance from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Him wearing those white shoes and the bow tie and winning over the biker's bar with his dance. But yeah, I, like you, Benny, too, went back and read something similar to that article. And I had forgotten about those accusations. But I also remember at that time, like, people boycotted his movies, people boycotted his shows. And yeah, it really is tragic because it really did derail. I mean, he was such a child's performer and he tried to keep his persona of Pee-wee versus the persona of Paul Rubens completely separate. Anytime he would give interviews, he would only give interviews as Pee-wee Herman, because he really wanted to just try to keep that character pure. And you know, you hear about how he was offered all kinds of endorsement deals. Like he turned down over $50 million worth of endorsement deals from cigarettes and alcohol, fast food, because he didn't want to promote anything that would be unhealthy to children. That was how like it wrapped up into the Pee-wee persona that he was. It is tragic that it will leave a black mark on him and that we didn't get more Paul Rubens. But you guys are both wrong in that the best Paul Rubens character that he portrayed was the spleen in Mystery Men. I absolutely love that movie, Mystery Men. And there's nobody on God's green earth that could have played the character whose ability is aimed flatulence like Paul Rubens. It was such a goofy, obnoxious character. But the fact when he would just hold out two fingers and he'd be like, fire in the hole, and he'd have to have somebody pull his finger. It was so freaking good.
I will say I've not seen Mystery Men. I was not a fan of it when it originally came out, but I know it has grown a cult following, and it probably is due for a revisit, if not just for Paul Rubens.
I think you should. His dramatic role in Blow was certainly very good. I mean, I remember him as the voice of the navigating UFO system in Flight of the Navigator. He was basically just channeling Pee-wee Herman through this alien tech. But yeah, it is sad. And anytime, you know, you hear about these private struggles that people keep quiet and you understand why. But it is shocking when something comes out like this and it's like, man, he's been battling cancer for 8 years. And you can imagine the toll that that takes. And, you know, you hope that he certainly is at peace and is no longer in pain, but Paul Rubens, you will be missed. Well, hopefully on to, I don't know if this will be better news or more sad news, but according to an old pal of JTE, one Jeff Snyder reported on John Rocha's podcast, The Hot Mic, that Adam Driver is out as Mr. Fantastic in the MCU rebooted Fantastic Four. His quote was basically that it appears that Adam Driver really was never engaged in the character and had not signed anything yet because he didn't really feel like he related to the character given the script that was coming out. So I don't know if this is a lot of fan casting that started to gain traction. I don't know if news reporters or news outlets just started to pick up the story that Adam Driver was going to be the next Mr. Fantastic, but it appears that he is not. It is confirmed now that he is not going to be our Mr. Fantastic in this MCU rebooted Fantastic Four series. JT, does this make you happy? Does this make you sad? What's your thoughts on this?
I'm kind of indifferent. I hate to not choose a side here. I remember the casting and I was like, fine. Yeah, if he wants to do it, he's a good actor. But he's such a good actor. I'm almost kind of happy that he's not going to be locked into the MCU. And he can do movies like Ferrari or Francis Ford Coppola's new film that he's starring in. Those are the kind of movies I want him to be doing. Go get that Oscar and then find another franchise that you could jump in and out of to pay the bills. Because if he was cast again, I would be totally fine with it. But I think, you know, when you sign on to one of these MCU movies, you're signing on not just for one film. you're signing on for maybe a decade of films, six, eight, seven, who knows how many they're going to lock you down for. So I totally understand any actor who doesn't want to jump into that boat, especially right now. I mean, they're kind of struggling a little bit. MCU is not on a good run. So they need to get their act together, you know, kind of reboot everything, not reboot, but reorganize. Hopefully Kevin Feige is kind of trying to cook up some better shows and movies, because the last thing they had come out, Secret Invasion, was just getting destroyed on Twitter. Not doing well in reviews. I thought the last Thor movie was horrible. Guardians, I wasn't even a huge fan of. I thought it was okay. It just feels like they're kind of lost right now, and I don't know if you want to sign up for that. This is not the MCU leading up to Infinity War where everything was just clicking and hitting left and right. So, Adam Driver, stay away from movies like 65 where you fight dinosaurs. It looked good on paper, but it wasn't a very good movie. Stick with the more dramatic stuff and go get that Oscar, and then find some other franchise to jump into. Maybe do some voice work.
How about you, Benny? Does Kylo Ren exiting the MCU make you happy, make you sad, or are you indifferent like JT?
I'm not sad that he's leaving the role of Mr. Fantastic. I think that would have actually kind of been a weird fit for him. Like, his sweet spot is are characters that kind of have a dark tinge to them. And that is not Mr. Fantastic. Like, Mr. Fantastic is just like a, you know, the preppy genius, you know. So, like, I don't think an actor that has sort of a dark soul in their performances would fit well with him anyway. But I am sad for the MCU overall, because we also like saw recently Mahershala Ali jump out. And, you know, like I said earlier, as tides turn, the tide is turning against the MCU. And it used to be they were getting the benefit of the doubt, and now, like, people are crushing them even before they do anything. And I think a lot of talent is trying to make their exit. Like, you'll see Mark Ruffalo start saying things like, oh, actors shouldn't sign with the MCU in articles and things like that. And so I think it's going to speed up the ultimate decline of the MCU as talent starts to steer away from it, where before they were, you know, climbing over each other to get in these movies. So in that sense, I'm sad he's out of it, but I don't think he would be the best fit for Mr. Fantastic.
So I'm kind of in both of your camps here. I am sad because Adam Driver is an enormous talent. I'm also with Benny in this, in that I don't know if he would have been the perfect Fantastic Four. I mean, physically, he could have played the role. You could have, you know, leaned him up a little bit and have him get that kind of Mr. Fantastic look. But also, Adam Driver isn't this, like, I don't know if he can play the smartest guy in the room. And that's always Reed Richards. So I was okay with the casting of Adam Driver. Once I saw it, I was like, okay, well, you know, he did a solid for Disney with the new Star Wars movie. So Disney's paying him back with getting him into the Fantastic Four in the MCU. But the Fantastic Four, when that movie comes out, that's going to be a big tentpole for the MCU. And with the Fantastic Four comes the new villain, Galactus, right? We know that that's coming. Everybody can see the writing on the wall. Is eventually Galactus will be showing up into the MCU.
I understand that, but give me Dr. Doom.
I was just going to get to that too. And then the opposite casting of Adam Driver was who was going to be cast as Victor Von Doom. And that right there should be the next huge big baddie of the MCU. But I agree with both of you guys. Marvel's kind of on a tinge right now. They're not kicking ass like they used to. And the story there is no, like, continuation story. It's all over the place. I understand that this is supposed to be the multiversal, but then you have things like Secret Invasion, and you look at the budget on, like, Ant-Man, you look at the budget on Secret Invasion, they go, we are losing money left and right. But they're just not putting out the quality of that. I don't know if that goes into a decision like that for an Adam Driver, and he doesn't want to be committed to 10 years of Reed Richards, but his reason is really not engaging with the character, you know, that was written given the script. Again, if you're Adam Driver and you have the opportunity to be this big tentpole character in the MCU and you turn that down because of the script, that's probably a smart move on his part. So I am curious now where they go with this. I don't know if it's still confirmed that Margot Robbie will be playing Sue Storm. I would imagine, given the success of Barbie, Marvel's going to go, okay, listen, if we dropped off three dump trucks full of money on your lawn, will that get you pleased to come and be Sue Storm? But at this point, she's probably going to get nominated for an Oscar for Barbie. This will be her second, because she was previously nominated for I, Tonya. So I don't really know if she's going to accept Marvel's dump trucks full of money, because at this point, she can make any movie that she wants to make.
I don't want, she's Harley Quinn. Stick to one iconic comic book character. Don't go Harley Quinn and Sue Storm.
I wouldn't be, again, Disney's going to drop off all the money that they possibly can and try to get her, because given the success of Barbie, they're like, come on, please, please, please. But again, given her success with Barbie, who knows? I doubt that she'll say yes to that.
I also would say, if I'm Marvel, her price just went up, obviously, right? Like, ooh, you said, yeah. Buckets. But Marvel needs to go back to finding stars instead of hiring stars.
Yeah.
Chris Evans wasn't a huge star. Robert Downey Jr. was somebody who was used to be famous. And, you know, they took a chance on him. Start finding these people. Start making stars. That's what MCU should be doing. Make stars. Don't, you know, go grabbing stars.
Yes, I agree 100%. Well, our next story, gentlemen, is also comic book movie related, and that's former DCEU mastermind Zack Snyder tweeted out and gave his support and approval for the upcoming Blue Beetle movie. This is kind of almost a passing of the torch, so to say, from Zack Snyder to the new DC universe. He says he's seen it. He says it's great. Your guys' thoughts, is this just simply a way for him to be able to pass the torch and be like, dude, please stop bothering me about, you know, the Snyder cuts? Or do you genuinely believe that, like, he's on board, seen the movie, and thinks this is a great flick? Does this increase your excitement for the upcoming Blue Beetle movie?
Nope.
Yep. JT?
Go ahead, Benny. Finish your thought.
Yeah. I would say this is a lot like when James Gunn said The Flash is the greatest superhero movie of all time. I think this is just somebody that, you know, wants to keep a really good relationship with Warner Brothers for things down the road. So he's throwing them a bone to try to get the angry Snyderverse people to leave this movie alone, at least. And this movie's not... needs all the help it can get. This movie is going to make $18 at the box office, regardless of how good it is. Like, The Flash is a good movie, made nothing. And this doesn't even have all the cachet of The Flash. So, I mean, I'm going to go see Blue Beetle because I really like comic book movies. But there's nothing that any director, anyone is going to say that's going to make this a box office hit.
Yeah, originally it was going to be a streaming film, and then they kind of pivoted halfway through, threw some more money at it. So let's make this a theatrical film. I think it's going to be fine. I think it could honestly be pretty good. I just don't think there's a lot of excitement, or it's not a character that people have ever really heard of. I'm not really familiar with him at all, and it's a little ridiculous sounding. Blue Beetle, that title doesn't make me want to run to the theater. DC kind of has a weird problem with titles. Black Adam, that's not a great title for a movie. Hey, there's a movie called Black Adam and there's Blue Beetle. It's a color and a name or an animal. So yeah, I'm going to go see it. Just like Benny said, I like comic book movies. I actually really like the kid from Karate Kid. So I'm excited to see him kind of, you know, being a lead role in the film. And I think Zack Snyder is just... you know, he said hashtag representation matters. And I think he believes that. And I think he wants people to go see it because it's the first, like, you know, Latino led superhero. But I think they're projecting like 18 million, 15 to 20 million is what they're projecting for opening weekend. And that's not great.
So I agree with Benny in that I think that this is Zack Snyder's way of being like, hey, listen, all you Snyderverse nerds that just plague these movies and are threatening to, you know, find James Gunn and hunt him down. That's his way of basically being like, back off. Please give this a chance. It reminds me, like, his tweet reminds me of, we always used to hear this anytime a new Terminator would come out, They'd always go to James Cameron. Yeah. What do you think? This is the greatest Terminator movie that's ever going to come out. Terminator Genesis will revolutionize the Terminator franchise. And then that didn't happen. And then Terminator Salvation. This is the greatest. It's listen, if you want to play the game politically correct, this is the route that you have to go. And he's right with the representation matters. And I'm genuinely excited for Blue Beetle. Blue Beetle should be the Iron Man of this new DC universe. The character is really cool. The skill set and abilities that he has is really cool. And yeah, this will be the first Latino-led superhero movie, and that needs to happen. And so I'm excited for Blue Beetle, but I'm also agree with you guys. I don't think this movie is going to do very well at the box office. Even if it's going to be a great movie, it's going to be a rough start for the new DC universe with this. So Zack Snyder giving his support and approval, let's hope it helps. Well, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from our sponsors. And then next, we're going to talk about our favorite haunted house movies to celebrate the genuine classic that is the new Haunted Mansion. Stay tuned.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay. That was some first date.
Yes, it was.
We should do it again sometime.
We should, yeah, absolutely.
Just not with each other.
Oh, yeah, definitely not me and you. Nobody wants that.
That's refreshing honesty, just like the bold taste of Ocean Spray's Ruby Red.
Sorry, I dozed off during dinner.
Ocean Spray, it's refreshingly honest.
Matrix on video cassette and DVD. Free your mind. What you couldn't believe at the movies now comes home. It's the movie critics call a virtual masterpiece. Buy or rent it today.
Welcome back, folks. And now our favorite segment, the extra movie butter. This week, in honor of the new Disney classic Haunted Mansion, we're going to discuss our favorite haunted house movies. Now, before we started recording, we started talking about if there should be certain parameters, like is the house haunted? Does Insidious count because it's more of like an evil entity? And we said, you know what? The hell with it. It's all included. So we're going to talk about our favorites, and anything is on the table, boys. It could be somebody who just ate some bad pea soup and they're spitting it up versus somebody like my personal favorite, Poltergeist, where you have not just an evil entity, but it is really bad shit going on in that house. And I'm going to lead us off with saying the Poltergeist, the Craig T. Nelson classic, is probably one of my favorite haunted house movies. You have the scares still to this day that hold up. The early graphics, and they used a lot of like still practical effects in that movie. Like I remember reading about Poltergeist and how they actually, like, for the skeleton sequences coming up out of the ground, how they actually used real skeletons for that sequence. It was like, holy cow, like, you really committed to this. But the whole idea of like an entity like a poltergeist, like being attached to a home, it's not attached to a person, it's attached to a dwelling, to a you know, a residence, and how it continues to just plague this family. That movie, still to this day, when the little girl says they're here, it's so freaking classic. But that's my number one for now. I'm going to turn it over to JT. What's your go-to haunted house favorite?
Yeah, Poltergeist definitely I'll just say has like some, I don't think the movie holds up as well as maybe some people, like you just said, but it does have some imagery which has stayed with me for my whole life. A clown doll will always scare me. I don't care what it is. It'll scare me. The tree scene really scared me. So, like, it's definitely burning in my brain. I kind of have a 1A, 1B. So, 1A, I'm going to go the horror route. And I'll raise your house. I'll give you a hotel, my friend. The Shining is still one of the great, great horror films of all time. And Stanley Kubrick putting his own style and only the way Stanley Kubrick can. The movie isn't so much scary as it is leaves you – it's more of a feeling. You watch that movie, it puts you in a state of mind, much like his sci-fi film, 2001 A Space Odyssey, does. It's not so much about the jump scares or the creepiness. It's just about the overall feeling the film leaves you with, whether it be dread, anxious and just like, what the F is happening right now? So I'm going to go with The Shining as my, I'm cheating a little bit. It's a huge hotel, but still one building.
Yeah.
And something scary about being alone in a huge building like that. When you're in a small house, you know where everything is. You know every nook and cranny. But when you're just three people in a giant mansion, you don't know what's going on the other side of this huge hotel. There's something scary about that. I always wondered how these celebrities who live in these huge mansions, that ever freaks them out a little bit being in such a huge house. Because it freaked me out a little bit. But they probably have the money for all the security in the world, so they're fine. And then my 1B, I got to go Beetlejuice. A haunted house movie from beginning to end.
Sure.
The funnest haunted house movie I think there ever will be. The Haunted Mansion, the Eddie Murphy one, and this one. Wish they could even be a small fraction of what Beetlejuice is. So Beetlejuice to me always sticks out when it comes to haunted movies. So that's my 1A, 1B, because I go to them both for different reasons.
I had Beetlejuice in my top three, but Benny, JTE, took my Poltergeist, Raised Me a Shining, and a Beetlejuice. What do you bring to the pot, sir?
So we were talking off camera. So me and Moose, we hosted a trivia show on YouTube. And I'm getting ready for our big Halloween episode. So I've been binge watching horror movies all summer. So I'm very fresh with the haunted house genre. And this is a genre that breeds a lot of really bad movies.
Oh, for sure.
And so I'm going to give you my my bottom three, and then I'll give you my top two. I'm gonna go five. I'm going to go all out.
Okay, let's hear
okay.
it.
All right. So the worst one, the remake of House on Haunted Hill in the 1990s. The original House on Haunted Hill is really good for its time. I want to say it's, I don't remember if it's 1959 or 1969, but it's an older movie, but it's really good for its time. The remake is god-awful. And then the other two are just so bad, they're enjoyable, but they are terrible, terrible movies. One, 13 Ghosts with Matthew Lillard and Tony Shalhoub.
Great trailer.
Yes, which is a terrible movie, but, you know, for its time, it's so bad, it's good. And then I don't know if anyone has seen this movie. It's a 1986 classic. It's House 2. And
so, excuse me, I have the Blu-ray Arrow Special Edition Blu-ray. I love that movie.
I do too, but it's terrible.
Why does that sound so weird?
I love House 2. Are you kidding me? I mean, I would argue it's not horrible.
No, it is in every way a bad movie. But like, if you were telling me today, hey, do you want to watch House 2? I'd be like, hell yes, I want to watch House 2. Oh. But it's awful.
I mean, it is hard for me to divorce myself of pure nostalgia because I just grew up watching that movie. And it's so different from the first film in a lot of ways. And the first film at times feels like almost like an Evil Dead movie. The second one feels like, if you guys ever heard of the movie My Science Project?
Yes.
is like that movie with a horror comedy. Like, that's a sci-fi version. This is the horror version. And I own both those movies on Blu-ray, by the way.
So, Moose, if you have never seen House 2, it's just think of a haunted house movie, but then with 80s rock music, evil puppets, and the end of Weird Science all thrown in.
Take the two guys from Weekend at Bernie's and put them in a haunted house movie. You basically have it.
It's amazing, but it's bad. And so I'm going to give this out here from my top, and there's some recency bias here, so bear with me.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Barbarian.
Oh.
You know, it just came out last year, but it is a house. It is haunted, kind of.
Okay.
So I went into that movie not wanting to watch it. You know, I thought, man, this is going to be stupid. This is going to be terrible. And I was like, you know, that was the funnest I've had at a horror movie that was made in the last couple of years. Amazing kills, really weird creatures, and a lot of creepy turns you just do not expect. So right now, I'm going to say Barbarian is my top haunted house movie.
Nice.
Wow. Did you say you had two tops?
The two tops. No, yeah, I just had one.
Right now, you're holding one ace.
Yeah, you're holding.
And you threw a couple of deuces on the table. So what else? What else you got?
Well, here's the thing: is like house two. If I was picking the second one, would probably be it.
Oh, all right, great.
But it's terrible.
Wow, Barbarian is weird because I guess when I think haunted, I think ghost, but you don't know what is going on for half that movie. So it could have been a ghost. It just turns out to be something way more messed up. Wow, those are all good choices. I have some honorable mentions. What about you, Moose? What honorable mentions do you have?
I have The Evil Dead, the original. Even the remake, still quality. I put Cabin in the Woods because it all takes place in the cabin. And it all takes place in the woods, so it's kind of a one setting. It's not quite haunted, but they can. Like, the company that, or the organization that controls all these creatures, absolutely have that at their disposal. I put The Haunting, the remake, the 1999 remake with Liam Neeson and, wow, Owen Wilson, in honor of Owen Wilson's return to a haunted house. And then the last two I have were Paranormal Activity, which we were talking about before the show, which, Benny, I urge you to get past that 30-minute mark. You get to the last 30, 45 minutes of that movie, it really starts to pick up steam. But the first probably hour of that movie is a very slow burn, and there's just minor little incidents until major things start happening. And then lastly, The Others with Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one too. Yep.
Yep. Dude, that final like segment when the like old lady is like, but we are your children, still super creepy.
Okay, if I can throw out two honorable mentions before JT gives his list.
Of course.
Go ahead.
The People Under the Stairs.
Nice. Wes Craven.
Yeah, which is just super creepy in every possible way.
Yep.
And I guess that'll be the only one. I'll let JT close this out.
All right, so my next one is, I think, a great film, and it's one I've showed a lot of friends, and I feel like it might be still kind of under the radar. It's a Spanish film called The Orphanage. It's a film I was lucky enough to see in theaters. It had a limited release here in L.A. years ago. It's a great film. It is a great, creepy, haunted house movie. This lady who used to grow up in an orphanage, she's older now, she decides to buy the house that they use at the orphanage. She brings her son there. And after a few days, her son goes missing. And then from that point on, like, time jump, they never were able to find him. And then some hauntings, things start coming in. I don't want to give any more than that because I think it's such a great film and very scary and creepy. So if anything out of this podcast, even if you don't like haunted house movies, I recommend checking out The Orphanage. I think it's not just a great haunted house movie. I think it's one of the great horror films of the past decade. So please check out The Orphanage, a Spanish film that I saw. I was lucky enough to see in theaters and have seen many times since. So I'm trying to think if there's any other ones. Evil Dead's a great pull. I would even say, you know, Evil Dead 2. I think you got to shout out The Conjuring. The first movie is definitely a haunted house movie, and it's probably the most successful of the past like 20 years. I was always more of an Insidious guy than I was a Conjuring guy. But the first Conjuring has some very effective scenes. And it is very creepy at times. The last one I'll pull out is Annabelle Creation, kind of similar to The Orphanage. It takes place in a house that is being used as an orphanage. But it's David F. Sandberg, the guy who did Shazam, and he did Lights Out. I think it's the best film in the Conjuring universe, in my opinion. I like it better than all the Conjuring films. I like it better than The Nuns. I like it better than all the other Annabelles. Annabelle Creation, I think, is the best horror film in that franchise. So please check it out if you missed it. And I think that's it for me.
Well, Friday the 13th, if we count the summer camp.
Okay.
Okay.
Nice. Well, Benny, you had one more that you wanted to get in there. Was that Friday the 13th?
Friday the 13th, yeah, if we're counting the summer camp itself.
Okay. Okay. I mean, would you count? No, I guess The Nightmare on Elm Street, not really, right? Because he goes in to the kid's dreams, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, solid list, but sorry, boys. I think I had the better hand, so I'm gonna win this debate. But
we're competing now. Okay. No, I'll give the win to Benny for bringing up House 2 because that even crossed my mind.
Yeah, you know,
I love that movie.
What about like horror movie spoofs, like a scary movie too? You know, where it's kind of spoofing the movie. It's not spooky, but I mean, what's your thoughts on like these horror movie spoofs? I always find them funny because I get really scared shitless watching horror movies, especially things like Paranormal Activity. I kind of mentioned this story to you guys. Mm-hmm. My old roommate, Justin, before I was married, had a bootleg version of this movie when it had first come out. And we watched it together. And then like right after we were done watching it, he's like, okay, I'm going to go stay the night at my girlfriend's. And he left. And it was just me alone in the house. And I remember being scared of every single tick and sound and everything that was happening. I was just like, oh my God, the demon's in the room with me right now. I slept 10 minutes that night. But then I go and I can watch these horror movie spoofs and it just makes me like laugh at like how scary I get in these movies. So like I actually put Scary Movie 2 on my list of honorable mentions. It's a terrible movie, but it just like the spoof of these horror movies do for me, like it offer like a sense of like laughing at myself almost for being as scared as I am at watching these movies. What's your guys' thoughts on comedic horror movies?
Oh, Repossessed with Leslie Nielsen and Selma Blair was one that I remember watching a lot as a kid. It's been a long time since I revisited that one. But yeah, for the most part, you know, scary movies were definitely fun at times. I'm trying to think what else. I know Marlon Wayans even did one called Haunted House. Is that what it was called? And it was basically a play on all the horror movies of the past decade, like Paranormal Activity and some of these other ones. I think I only saw the first one and I thought it was okay. It's hard to do, man. You know, but if you're successful to do it, you're going to make some good money because they're cheap to make. But yeah, nothing really comes to mind. But Repossessed is one I remember just growing up because they actually had the girl from The Exorcist in it. And Leslie Nielsen is just the king. He was the king of comedy for spoofs back in the 80s and early 90s.
If I'm not mistaken, that also featured Jesse Ventura, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, he sang Devil with the Blue Dress On.
Yep.
I appreciate that you put in Selma Blair instead of Linda Blair because that
movie. Totally different. My bad. Linda Blair. Speaking of that, the Exorcist trailer just came out. Not looking too good.
Watched the original Exorcist for the first time last week.
Great film.
Quality film.
Nice. Great film.
Well, before we move on to our next segment, gentlemen, I'm going to offer you a quick bit of movie trivia. We'll see who gets it first.
Okay.
What was the name of the bartender in The Shining?
Scatman Carruthers.
Lloyd.
JT with the win. It is Lloyd. Scatman Carruthers played the like gardener.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. He's the one who got the... Yeah, I won't say what happened.
Yeah.
He's the guy...
The movie's 40 years old. Yeah. You can spoil it.
It's been in a Simpsons treehouse of horror, so I guess it's fair game. Yeah, I love that scene in The Shining where he just comes in, gets an axe to the head immediately. Like, you think he's going to save the day, but that's what Kubrick does. He plays your expectations.
Well, JT wins that round. Well done. And, folks, we are going to take a break. Next segment, JT and Benny are going to review The Haunted Mansion.
Right now, get a half McDonald's McDeli sandwich with Campbell's soup or medium fries for just $2.99.
I don't believe it.
It's perfect.
Only McDonald's offers this great combination. Buy a half McDeli turkey and cheese, grilled chicken Caesar, or the Club Deluxe, and get your choice of delicious soup or medium fries for only $2.99.
McDeli, I like it.
McDeli!
I am definitely a believer.
Did somebody say McDonald's? Get a half McDeli sandwich, Campbell's soup, or medium fries for $2.99.
Right now at Circuit City, you'll save on great gifts for everyone on your list. Like this GE 25-inch TV with sleep timer and remote, only $199.99. If you're looking for great home audio, Circuit City has low prices on the best brands. Like these Pioneer Bookshelf loudspeakers, only $19.99 each. Or this 3-CD mini system with dual cassette deck and remote, only $59.99. Great gifts and super low prices right now at Circuit City.
So when we come back, I'll just do a quick non-spoiler review of my thoughts on Talk to Me, then we'll just get right into the Haunted Mansion. I'll spend a very short amount of time on it.
Okay. I'll just bring us back in and be like, JT, you saw Talk to Me. This movie is now a hit in the U.S. This was made in Australia. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts. How about that?
Yeah, then we'll go right into Haunted Mansion. Cool.
Okay. Here we go. Welcome back, folks. And now our review of Disney's new bust, The Haunted Mansion. But before we get to that, there is a new horror movie that was made in Australia that found its way into the top 10 box office this weekend, making a pull of $10 million so far. It's the movie Talk to Me. And our very own JTE saw this movie. JT, what are your thoughts?
Listen, I see everything, basically. There's very few movies that get past me. I love horror films. You know, A24 bought this, and they do have a reputation. Me and my girlfriend are big fans of A24 for the most part. Obviously, some of their movies are really out there. But Australia horror, I was really curious to see what this was going to be like. Had a lot of buzz coming out of Sundance. My friend Jeff Snyder recommended it to me because he saw it back when it first hit the festivals. So, yeah, we went and saw opening night. And it was really good. And I don't want to get too much into the plot details because this is one of those movies that I feel like the less you know going in, the better, because you kind of discover things as it goes. But what I will say is it's funny at times. It's shot very well. But it is not one of those movies where it's about jump scares so much or about, you know, what's crawling outside the door. It's more of a shock kind of horror in some ways. The directors do a good job of ramping up the scenes. Again, not a jump out scare kind of movie. It's more of a ramping up, and you're not quite sure what's going to happen. So the movie kind of keeps you on your toes throughout. And there is a great, which I think all horror movies have, is an emotional through line throughout the film that our main character is going through. And that impacts the way she sees things and how she deals with things. And there is some symbolism throughout the film. Some of it might be a little bit heavy-handed, but I think that's okay in horror films. Horror films, for the most part, are very heavy-handed when it comes to symbolism. But I really enjoyed it. I think there are a few scenes that are not so much scary, but very disturbing. And as I was watching, I was like, damn, that's messed up. And I'm not talking about violence so much as what the characters are going through. It's not so much, oh my God, I can't look, this is too gory for me. It's more like, I see what's happening, and that's messed up. So I definitely recommend. The movie's an hour and like 39 minutes. It's a short film. It's really well shot, really well acted, and it has a great atmosphere. And it's one of those movies, like I said, it ramps up the scenes. And I think the directors, it's a great showcase for these directors. I'd love to see them get, not maybe just make more original films, but like I'd rather see these guys make a Scream movie than the two guys that are making the Scream movies right now. Because I haven't really been a big fan of those last two films. I think these guys would bring a better, darker, and more violent edge to the film that I think that series needs. So yeah, I really dug the film. Check it out if it's playing near you. I think it's making a lot of money for a small film. I think it's worth it. And I think word of mouth is going to be strong throughout.
Very nice. Thank you, sir, as always, for your seeing everything, number one. And number two, amazing insight. We appreciate you, JT. Folks, full disclosure, I have not seen The Haunted Mansion. So most of this conversation will be had between Benny and JT. So what I will do right now is to kick it off to them and to say this movie bombed for its budget. And I think for expectations, we talked about that earlier. Now, you both saw this movie. Benny, you said you were the only person in the theater when you saw this. Is that for good reason? Let's hear your thoughts on this movie.
This movie is, in many ways, perfectly forgettable. It's not terrible. It's not that great. It's one of those things that you just say, yeah, I saw that, and then you move on and you never think about it again. Like, 20 years, somebody will come to me up to me and say, you know, there was a Haunted Mansion remake in 2023. And I'll be like, I think I saw that. And I won't remember anything about it. And I think that's where the movie stands. There are some things about it that were pretty decent that I enjoyed. But for the most part, it was gloriously forgettable.
Yeah, Benny, I got to agree with you. It was pretty forgettable. From like the second I walked out of theater, It was kind of like one in one eye out the other. I just usually, you know, I say that with ears. I guess you can say it with movies, one eye in ear. But yeah, I will say this. I was never hating my time in the theater, but I was never really enjoying my time in the theater. It was more like I was a witness, like I was a jury member who had to sit here and watch this 2-hour movie, and I'm just judging it. And I'm like, oh, I'm not really moved either way here. So yeah, it's kind of a failure. I think in some ways it's a failure, but I also agree with you. If you took your family to see this, if you took your kids to see this, I think there's enough up on the screen and there's enough fun actors in here to be like, okay, this is going to keep my kid distracted for 2 hours. He's not going to be running around like a madman bored out of his mind. But, you know, the best kid films today give something for the adults to hang on to instead of just the kids. And I will say, with Owen Wilson, Danny DeVito, Jamie Lee Curtis, some of the comedic talent they had in this movie, I was expecting to laugh more. And like you said, you saw this basically by yourself. I saw it in a theater full of people. And nobody was laughing out loud. Like, there was a few chuckles throughout the theater. There's a few people, you know, laugh here and there, but at no point did I ever feel like there was a scene where everyone was just laughing, where everyone was just, you could tell the audience was having a good time. It's like we were all just there watching this movie, and it wasn't really moving the needle in either direction. So it's just, it's a hard movie to talk about. Like, I don't think this is going to be a very long discussion because there's really nothing to hang on to or really discuss. It felt very much like a product. It didn't feel like they had a real great story to tell. They do try to throw in some, you know, they try to touch on grief a little bit in this film. And that's one of the biggest themes of the film is grief and how you deal with grief and, you know, how our characters deal with it. But it's nothing new, really. I guess maybe you could say it's a little new for a kid's movie, but I think there's other kids' movies that probably do it much better.
I'll say, for the positive for this movie, like, Lakeith Stanfield was really good in it. He was almost good in it to the point that it distracted you from the rest of the movie. He seemed like he was in a serious movie somewhere else, and everyone else was, like, doing a sequel to the Eddie Murphy version of this movie. And so it didn't always jive, but Lakeith Stanfield actually does give a pretty good performance in this. I wish it had been in a different movie.
Yeah. And I don't blame the actors. I think they had a really great cast. I didn't mention earlier, Tiffany Haddish is very funny. All these Owen Wilson, I'm a huge Owen Wilson fan. And most of the laughs I got from this movie were from some of his ad libs or some of his, the way being doing his Owen Wilson thing. And that's why the movie, I can't help but be a little disappointed because he has so much talent up on that screen. They opened up the checkbook for this movie and said, we're going to put this with some of the, you know, really good comedians, really good actors. And they feel, I can't help but feel like they're wasted. And Lakeith Stanfield's a great actor, And he's doing his best, but the material's just not there.
Now, let me ask you this. This was one thing that I thought about when I was leaving the movie. And I hate to throw more trash at Jared Leto. I think he's, you know, he constantly gets hammered, but he does the voiceover for the villain in this movie. And I thought that villain was the biggest detractor from this being a good movie. I mean, like I said, it's a forgettable movie. It's not terrible, but it's forgettable. I thought it could have at least been a good movie, but the way that they do the voiceover, you know, I'm not a Disney person, but he does it like it's a PA system announcing at like an old ride or like an old timey movie. It's like, get ready for scares, kids. You know, like the villain always talks through like a PA system in this really cheesy way that made the villain not have any stakes at all. Like you felt like the villain was there for no reason whatsoever. You didn't bring any kind of tension to the movie. And I felt a lot it was because of his vocal performance and a lot of the ways that they did the sound for the villain. Like, did you notice how the
film sounded? I had no problem with his voice. For me, it's like there was no reason it had to be Jared Leto. You could have cast any actor to play that voice. He brought nothing to the role. To me, the villain felt like a Scooby-Doo villain. I was like, am I watching a Scooby-Doo cartoon right now? Because he's just so overly comical. Even the ghosts who are haunting the house, at no point was I even for a second scared. And I think at no point is the movie trying to make you scared. And I think that was a big mistake. I think, you know, a haunted house movie, even though it is for kids, you could still put a little bit of creepiness in there. You still put a little touch of horror and suspense. You know, put your audience on edge a little bit. At no point in this movie are they trying to scare the audience. It is just, I guess, an amusement park ride from beginning to end. But listen, Pirates of the Caribbean, it's a crappy little ride where you go through on a boat and there's these animatronics, and they took that little idea and they made a great movie out of it. You could have done that with Haunted Mansion. You could have, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean is creepy at times when the skeletons and the way they go in and out of darkness. And I got to compare it to that because what our movie is there based on the amusement park ride, but Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean. So I think it just goes to show you the script is lazy. The direction felt lazy. And it felt like a paycheck to me for the actors and the director.
Now, so knowing what a method actor, well, knowing what a method actor that Jared Leto is, do you think that he spent 3 weeks as a ghost preparing for this role?
He slept in a cemetery with a tent probably for a good week, something like that.
Sorry, Betty. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's all right. Like, I think what they should have done is taken this exact same cast and just went with the script from House 2 and did a shot-for-shot remake with this cast. That's really what they should have done.
It would have been better.
Yes, yes, it would have.
Also, the movie's 2 hours, and I felt the length. And when the movie, this movie really is just trying to entertain you for 2 hours. It's not trying to do much more than that. And when I feel the 2 hours, that's a problem. Like, this movie, I felt like an hour and a half movie stretched out to 2 hours. Like, towards the end, I was like, let's wrap this up. I'm ready to go. There's nothing here really keeping me here. But again, to Benny's point, it's not offensively bad, but sometimes it's worse to just be in the middle, right? So if it's really bad, I can have some fun with you. If it's really good, I'm having a good movie. When it's just so down the middle, it just kind of becomes forgettable and boring.
I would say what add to this is, since I was the only person in the theater, and I literally mean it's me and no one else, I was able to play Yahtzee on my phone during the movie, and that made it seem to go a lot faster and drag a lot less. So I would say if you're going to go see this movie in the theater, shoot for like a really early morning matinee after school starts. So, you know, you can play Yahtzee on your phone, and I think it'll help.
Yeah, and the hard thing is, you know, we don't have any kids to bring to this thing. I could definitely see a kid throw your kid in front of the TV and throw this on Disney Plus in a few weeks or a month. I think they'll be distracted enough, but it's not going to be one of these movies that you're gonna, I don't think it's going to have a reputation like Halloween's coming, throw on Haunted Mansion for the kids. Like, it's not going to have that kind of life. I think it's going to be pretty. Just like the last Haunted Mansion with Eddie Murphy, it's going to come and go, and I think it's going to be pretty forgotten. I don't think it's going to stand the test of time, put it that way.
Well, we might as well move into spoiler territory. It doesn't sound like we're going to have too much to say, so let's start with what you guys liked and did not like about this movie. Benny, what worked for you? What didn't work for you? Was Danny DeVito even in this movie? Not one of you has referenced him as a good spot. And I know he's in it, I believe.
I don't know, like, if these commercials are national, but have you guys seen the Jersey Mike sub commercial with Danny DeVito?
I don't think there's billboards
of Jersey Mike with Danny DeVito all over Southern California.
Okay, well, I've not seen the commercial.
If you find the commercial, he's essentially that. He's playing like a parody of Danny DeVito that just happens to be in this movie. So, like, if Danny DeVito, like, showed up to your house at, like, 2 a.m, shit-faced, and, you know, you just invited him in to eat some scones or something, that's, like, his contribution to the movie. There's not really a reason for him to be there. He has a couple good one-liners. He probably has the single funniest line in the movie, where this guy's talking about his dead wife and crying. He's like, I bet you if she hadn't died in that car wreck, her cholesterol would have been really high.
Yeah. That was probably the biggest laugh in the whole movie, honestly. Yes,
it was. That was, so if it wasn't for Danny DeVito, you wouldn't have that, but otherwise there really wasn't a reason for him to be there.
Well, the funny thing is I like actually kind of the setup for this movie. It's a group of like misfits who are all not quite what they seem or are very eccentric characters. So you got Owen Wilson, who's claims to be a priest. He goes does exorcisms. Lakeith Stanfield, who does haunted tours, who doesn't believe in ghosts. Tiffany Haddish, who is basically a tarot card reader, you know, some sort of medium, but it's Tiffany Haddish. And then you have Rosario Dawson and her son, who are the other two main characters who bought the house. Like, I like this setup of, instead of having actual professional like ghost people trying to help them, they kind of have this ragtag team, and Danny DeVito plays an eccentric teacher who teaches about the different haunted houses in New Orleans. So I like the setup. I think there's like places there for comedy. It just doesn't come together. They all get together and it doesn't really go anywhere. It's not really that funny. Owen Wilson made me laugh a few times just because Owen Wilson, I like his sense of humor, and he has a few lines. He has those Owen Wilson type lines. They're just funny, but that's, you know, specific to me. I'm a fan of his. Tiffany Haddish doesn't really do anything that funny in this movie, and she's a really funny actress. Danny DeVito is just being a little eccentric, but he has that one line, but overall he doesn't really do anything that funny. And I think my excitement for the movie before seeing it was seeing all these different comedic actors interacting with each other and just kind of, you know, riffing, playing jazz, comedy jazz. I just wanted to see them all in a stew together and deliver some good laughs. I felt like they all just didn't do that. I don't know if that's the direction or the screenplay. I don't know if they were allowed to improvise that much. I feel like Owen Wilson at least did, because his lines sound very Owen Wilson-y. And don't forget, this guy wrote films with Wes Anderson when he first started. So I think he knows what he's doing. But it is very similar to what you've seen Owen Wilson do in almost all his own movies. So I feel like, I don't know if the director, maybe they were handcuffed a little bit by the, was it PT or PG-13? I don't even remember. Do you remember, Benny?
Not offhand.
Yeah, it could have been PG, honestly, because there's nothing in here that really comes close being scary or obscene or anything. So I wouldn't be shocked if this was a PG movie. Maybe they should have pushed it more towards a PG-13. They could have got a little bit, you know, edgier with the comedy and with the horror.
Yeah, I would say the character design of the ghost, especially the villain, is about as generic as you can go for like character design of these kind of things. They're almost like they're from the 80s, but in a bad way. Like if you were seeing like a kid's TV Halloween movie in the 80s where there were ghosts and it's kind of just people with a little shiny light around them, that's kind of where they went with the ghosts. And even the villain, when JTE says it's like a Scooby-Doo villain, it is a Scooby-Doo villain called the Creep. Like this exact character design was in a Scooby-Doo episode in 1962, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they were not breaking ground with the character design here at all.
And I just looked it up. It is PG-13, and I'm still not, I couldn't tell you why. Maybe the only thing I think of is they do deal with death in some mature ways throughout the film, because they do touch on grief throughout the film. That's the only reason why I can see this movie getting a PG-13, because I don't think there's any cussing. At no point are the scary at all. Not only is the main villain ghost, like you said, a Scooby-Doo villain, all the other ghosts look like they're straight out of the amusement park ride where they're just glowing blue people, and they're nothing. There's nothing scary about them. So I don't know. I just thought this movie overall was just a big missed opportunity, because there is a lot of talent up on that screen. And when I saw the trailer, I was like, this could actually be a really fun haunted house movie. And I just feel like they didn't deliver on that aspect.
I would say the best thing about this movie is it is one of those movies that you could recast and remake in your own head and make a really fun movie out of it. But in it and of itself, it has really nothing to offer. It's not even bad enough to sit together with your friends and talk shit about. It is just there.
Yeah. And like I said, that's kind of worse than it being bad. Because like you said, if it's bad, you get like, wow, this is bad. This is kind of fun. This is just, it's the money's on the screen for the most part. I mean, there is a lot of money spent on this film. I'm sure Disney's going to lose a pretty penny on this movie. And I feel bad for Keith Stanfield, because I think, you know, he wanted to make a good movie. I think he's really good in this. And I think all the actors, for the most part, you know, do what they're supposed to do. I think the writing and the direction is kind of where this movie fails, unfortunately.
What does work in this movie for you guys? Benny, was there anything that did work for you and you were like, you know what, this is the bright spot of this movie? You mentioned Lakeith Stanfield. I'm a fan. I've been rooting for the guy. What worked for this movie for you? We obviously know a lot did not go right, but let's hear about what went right from you, sir.
If you cut everything out of the movie that makes the movie itself, and you just had like the little clips of Lakeith Stanfield with his like wife that passes away, and you just sort of string them together as like a a 12-minute little mini drama, that would work. You know, you would get the feels from watching that. But everything else in it is completely and utterly unforgettable. I mean, Danny DeVito has a couple of good one-liners. Owen Wilson has a couple of good one-liners, but it's not enough for you to want to sit through 2 hours to get to them. You know, like I said, there's 15 really good minutes in this movie, but it's a 2-hour movie, and it's just not worth the payoff.
JT, how about you? What worked for you?
I would say Owen Wilson did work for me. I think he was funny to the point where I wish he was in it more. I think Danny DeVito has a few lines. I think Rosario Dawson and her son are well cast. I think the son has a few funny lines, and I think he's actually pretty funny. He has a few moments where I actually was like, all right, this kid, he's up for the movie. He's up for the role. He's actually pretty funny. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is there's a candle, and this is in the trailer, unfortunately. There's a candle who blows himself out because he's scared, and Lakeith Stanfield's holding him. And he's so scared he's trying to blow himself out. I thought that was adorable and very cute, and I wish he was throughout the whole movie because I just thought he was such a funny little gag. And every once in a while, there are a funny little moment here and there, but it's so fleeting and so quick that it goes by and you chuckle and you're like, God, I wish they would have done more with that. And that's why a lot of the movie feels like a missed opportunity, because I think the ingredients are here to make a fun haunted house movie. I just think maybe the script and the direction didn't meet up to it. I guess all end of the day, script is where it all really kind of begins, right? You have to have a good script to make a good movie. And maybe this movie had a timetable where we got to get this made. Let's write it, get it out there for July of this year. I don't know why it came out in July. But again, I think the strongest thing, the thing that kept me engaged throughout the film was the cast. I think the cast is good. Even Jamie Lee Curtis in her small role, she's fine. She's good. Tiffany Haddish, she's fine. She's good. I just think they're all feels like they're being held back from being really great. And that's what stops us from being like a really bad movie to an okay movie, because of how good the cast is and how much they're able to do with so little.
If I can have one closing thought on this movie, Moose, and it's about that candle. Like Disney, they used to have like a long tradition of sneaking penises into their kids' movies. And I swear there's one point that candle turns into a dick. And so like if somebody, once they get this on Blu-ray, they want to screenshot that and send it in. So I know I'm not crazy. Please feel free to do so.
Well, to our audience, you can find Benny at Crush the Plums on Twitter. Please send him over that image once you find
excuse
it
me, right. It's called X now.
Excuse me, X. Well, folks, we'll do our final thoughts here. Benny's obviously looking for the dictorized version of that candle. So if you find it, please reach out to him with that. JT, your final thoughts, sir.
Yeah, again, I didn't think about this movie much after I left the theater, except for what I knew I was going to talk about this podcast. It was too long, but there is a lot of really great talent up on the screen. It just feels like they didn't quite live up to their talents, or they weren't used or given the material that they need to make this a really good, memorable film. I think your kid could watch it and be totally fine, but it's not going to be one of those movies you're going to throw on every Halloween. It's not going to be a holiday classic. It's just going to kind of come and go like the last one. Sorry, Eddie Murphy. You still made a worse film. Eddie Murphy movie's worse. I'll still say that. It's better than the Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion. I'll give him that.
Look at that praise. Benny, any final thoughts besides the candle becoming a penis?
Other than Dick Candles, watch House 2. Like, treat yourself. Get some friends. Get really drunk. Watch House 2.
Well, folks, we'll wrap our episode for The Haunted Mansion. Tune in next week where we will have a doubleheader. We will be reviewing The Meg 2 and the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Our very own Benny Hamlin threw out his most anticipated movie this year as Meg 2. So we can't wait to hear what our good buddy Benny has in store for us with the Meg 2.
Can I say this, though?
I will probably be reviewing TMNT.
I already saw Ninja Turtles, and I can't wait to hear what you guys think about it. The one reason I'm a little excited for Meg 2, because I thought the first one was okay, is the director of this film is actually somebody who came kind of for like indie films. He did the film Free Fire with Brie Larson, and he's mainly known for like smaller indie dramas, horror films, and even action films. He was a very interesting choice to direct this film. I think his name is Ben Wheatley. I think that's his name. I could be 100% wrong on that, but the fact they went and found this guy to make this movie actually has me a little bit excited, because this is not like Louis Leterrier, who they just pulled out to make Fast X, and they actually went and got somebody interesting. Like when he was announced as a director, I was like, really? Ben Wheatley? The guy who directed Kill List, which is one of my favorite cult horror films, that is a really messed up psychological horror movie. And he also made High Rise. I don't know if you guys saw that with Tom Hiddleston. He's made some really interesting films. And I think he's a really inspired choice. So who knows? Maybe Meg 2 is going to be awesome.
I would love if the Meg 2 was just turns out to be like the greatest movie of the year. Like just tops Oppenheimer and Barbie as like the top. Like, wow, did you see the Meg 2? It's so groundbreaking. But unfortunately, I think it'll be Jason Statham kicking a couple of giant sharks in the face, which, hey, maybe that is better than Barbenheimer. I'll let you know at the end of this week when I see both. But folks, we are going to call it a night. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please come back every week. We try to release these every Tuesday. But on behalf of the three amigos, JT, Benny, and myself, we wish you a good night. See you later, folks.
Everybody.
Penis candle.
God, I hope that exists.